Hello and welcome to the Black Mesa facility here with Campaign Comrades. We're on a facility tour, following scientist Gordon Freeman. We've been asked to don the HEV suits, and join into the daily, comings and goings.
Don't put your helmets on, though. I want to be able to see your beautiful faces throughout this whole time.
Yeah, also, I'm not messing up this hair, Joe.
Keep all arms and legs inside the tram at all times.
Make sure you press the computer button to open the suit door before you just start running into the suit trying to get it.
I mean, the observers there probably should have grabbed Gordon and been like, oh no, something's horribly wrong with him.
He's already been exposed to like the mutant alien radiation that we're just pumping. That's like one of the best bits in the opening of this game, when you're, just the whole tram sequence is great, but then when you're literally just going over a pool of radioactive waste.
Yes.
Yep. It's like, I've got ball cancer now.
I spent a lot of time submerged in radioactive waste.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Me too.
Like, there's that level. We're just going hot and wild with it.
Just going in with it.
There's that bit in the tram thing where it's like you can try to launch yourself over it, and there's like an achievement or something tied to it. It's like get a certain distance with it. I could never get it to work and kept dying, but like you can literally just get off the tram and walk around to the right.
Yes.
I felt like a fucking idiot.
Now there's a couple moments where instead of launching yourself to your doom, you can just not do that. It's like, there's one spot in particular where it's like you gotta walk around some pipes, and if you're down low enough, you just can float on some barrels and some radioactive goo.
Right.
And if you take that long enough, it's just a loop that brings you back to the beginning. It's like I remember getting back there and just reloading my save and reloading all of the health I had just lost in the loop of radioactive goo.
I saved scum the shit out of this game.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely the spot where you turn on the fan and have to climb up the ladder.
Oh my god, I was like, you're reading my fucking brain. Like, that was one of the most frustrating moments in the game.
I had to save right at the button so I could hit the button, turn, and go.
Me too. I may not have had it right away, but after the first time getting decapitated, I did that.
Reloading as far away as you did.
The platforming jank in this game is...
It's a 90s game. So, by far
the most frustrating.
I guess we should probably introduce it a little bit. We're talking about Half-Life.
Can I say what a shame it is in a way that this game came out in the era that it did? Because it would be an absolutely amazing meme game. If it had, come out in a time when, memes were as, prolific as they are, today. So much fucking shit. As you're all bringing up already, it would be perfect fodder for memes. But yes, go ahead.
So, to bring it all, to start it off, I mean, we're talking about Half-Life, which was Valve's first game that they released as a company in November 1998. I was a wee lad.
Uh-huh.
5 years old.
Yeah, 5 years old, just chilling. Definitely.
Who cares in the world?
I don't remember if I was still living in the swamp country at that point.
Swamp boy wouldn't have a computer that could play Half-Life.
Yeah, no, definitely not. We had a computer that could play Doom, though. It's really probably back,
I mean,
at
Doom
that,
runs and, on anything.
But even still back at that age, Doom was still probably could have run on my toaster.
Yeah, run on a potato.
But it was their first game that they released. They were originally founded in 1996 by former Microsoft employees Gabe Newell and Mike Harrington.
Do you know what they did for Microsoft? Were they just programmers?
I didn't look too far into their roles at Microsoft at the time. I just thought it was interesting that they came from Microsoft.
Uh-huh.
But they're what they were trying to do with Half-Life was they were trying to innovate the FPS genre in a way that they were frustrated that other studios weren't at the time. How people were kind of content with the Doom, the Wolfenstein, the corridors and middle shot, the Quake, because that's actually where they borrowed the engine from. They took the Quake engine, and that's where they started for their basis.
Which is that different from the Doom engine? It's the same company. Yes.
It's still id. Yeah, it's both of them are id, but yeah, it was yeah, I've seen some interesting like kind of flow charts of, you know, explaining why Half-Life was so influential, right? And something that we'll probably talk about later in the episode, but like, yeah, it's like you see the direct DNA imprints for, you know, Doom to Quake to Half-Life, and then Half-Life is where it really kind of just branches out and kind of the modern, especially FPS as we get
apparently it they rewrote over 70% of the engine from from the Quake engine to create what they needed for Half-Life, and some of the biggest additions were a direct 3D support and skeletal animation, which was a pretty big change at the time compared to like the blockier animations. I mean, you all probably hated how old this game looked, but this was pretty cutting edge for 1998 as far as interactivity and animation is concerned.
No, I will say, like, as much as the older graphical style does sometimes bother me, this game had some things that I was impressed with. One of them being like seeing the skulls rattle around of like dead soldiers. Just the life in the background of shots, like just scientists doing things, all of what's happening just in the background, I found impressive, even for when this game's from.
Yeah, it's exemplified even in that opening bit, right?
Yeah,
you know, as
we're absolutely
going through the tram, seeing
you can hop off the tram
into the say
you can,
into
you can
the
walk
burning
down the
pit.
Railway and walk all the way there. It takes forever.
I bet. What about the parts where it lifts, like where it lifts up and down?
Might not be able to do those parts. I just know that you can walk off.
You
and
just
you can walk.
You swan dive.
Going back to Newell and Harrington quickly, it says that Newell was a producer at Microsoft and Harrington was a...
What?
I don't know what that means, but Harrington was a programmer. Said that Newell like produced, was the producer of the first three iterations of Window and had like a big role in Doom. And then Harrington was a actual programmer for Microsoft.
I mean, Gabe is still the figurehead of Valve today.
Yeah,
he's still Big Papa Gabe. A little fun fact.
Yeah, so
about
the Steam,
Half-Life,
the Steam Deck is the Gabe Cube.
Yes, he handed out the OG 100 units, like directly to Seattle residents or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When this game was in development originally, so to like frame this, you know, 96 to 98 is a pretty short development time for, you know, what they did compared to, you know, how long games take to develop nowadays. But while it was in development, it was codenamed Quiver, named after Arrowhead Military Base from Stephen King's The Mist.
Oh. I bet that got
a lot of inspiration from.
I bet that got your brain tingling.
It did indeed, but
great.
Yeah, that's actually,
I was getting a work call, sorry about that.
No worries. You can actually see a little bit of the Mist's influence on Half-Life story and what they were going for, you know, with military interference and, you know, bringing aliens from a different portal dimension.
Yeah, definitely. Not some really some direct ties between the two stories in their overarching.
Why does
plot
Valve
line.
Love portals so much? What's their what's their deal with portals?
I mean, they love portals just as much as they love not making third games. They make the joke at least once this episode.
Yeah, because that's what Black Mesa is doing. They're studying portal technology. That's what they're.
Yes.
That's what they're trying to do. You know, you
fuck around with portals and shit.
I didn't know that. Yeah,
it was green portals too. So like they did it before.
Yeah.
Nobody gets turned into a pickle though, so it is not the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Fair. They ended up deciding on the name Half-Life because I just thought this was interesting. It was evocative of the theme, not cliche, and they liked that it had an associated Greek letter lambda for marketing purposes.
Fucking nerds.
Is there like a Greek revival?
And I mean, it's in the game, you go to the Lambda facility, which is
isn't that where the lab is?
Yes. Towards the end of the.
Yeah.
Pretty much close to the climax of the game.
Make you climb. Yes,
right towards the end there. So this was originally supposed to launch in 1997. They were targeting a November 1997 launch.
Crazy. 1 year turnaround.
A 1 year turnaround for this, and decided it needed a little more time to cook.
Let them cook.
Like the tidbit they showed got like everyone was ranting and raving. All the outlets of the time. They won awards at the show that they put some of the debut footage at.
Because there were no Game Awards. Was there even the Spike TV?
It was the E3 Electronic Entertainment Expo. I haven't seen it written out like that. Which, maybe it was before it was rebranded as E3.
E cubed. That's what they were calling it.
R.I.P.
But they ended up hiring science fiction author Mark Laidlaw.
The fuck did he say? What did he write?
No clue.
Anything I would have heard of?
How
do you spell his last name?
Laidlaw. And it's M-A-R-C. Which means he might be Canadian or French.
Yeah, he's French.
Merc.
Anything fun on that list?
His novels, nothing I've heard of.
Fair enough.
Nice. 400 Boys, well, Dank Den.
400 Boys?
Oh, yeah. The perfect way.
Put this man on a list. Yeah. I don't know who this man is.
The
put
two
him
books
on a list
he would have written at that point. Actually, there's more here. Oh, that's short fiction. Sorry.
1,000 Boys.
He had written boys. Actually... a bunch of stuff before that. The 37th Mandela. He was nominated for the World Fantasy Award. I've never heard of any of these.
Yeah. Lock this man up.
They brought him in to work on some of the characters and story and level design aspects, realizing that it probably helps to have somebody with world building experience to help with that aspect rather than just programmers and producers.
Smart decision.
Well, that was the big kind of the true big innovation they made, right? Was like actually giving their shooter a story versus just dropping you into hell and rip and tear. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
There's no story here.
Well, that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to create the first real quote unquote immersive FPS, like a true story, which I mean, again, the interactivity that they put in at the time, you know, and there's a lot of it that's not overt, like the way that you can push a lot of the buttons and open a lot of the handles. They're not big and bright and yellow that say like open here, or they don't have like a button prompt that shows up.
So when you get someone close to them. Mike, who doesn't know you need to go touch the computer before you go put your suit on, and you just running in the glass.
Yeah, I'm just mashing the button. All you know, when I come across anything that looks like a button, I learned. Well, that. Yeah, I learned quickly. That.
Yeah.
In a 2001, Edge. And that, you know, another publication that we've spoken about here. Making of series article, Gabe Newell was discussing the difficulties encountering early on, and they decided to, in a desperate attempt, put together just one single level with every weapon, enemy, scripted event, and level, like the whole level laid out with all of its quirks, just to see if it could like work together, like if the vision they had functioned, and that single level that they built was enough to like galvanize the team and like bring them together to realize that like they had something they were working towards.
Did any of that make it into the final level design?
Yeah, it was the original office complex,
which is probably my favorite level. One of my favorite levels. In terms of it, made the quote unquote puzzle design of its exploration made me feel smart. You know, it's like, oh, I need to go do this and do that to, you know, progress here. And, you know, it didn't scream that, oh, yeah, this is a puzzle I'm trying to solve. It just felt like it felt organic in a way, but that still made in a way that didn't make it feel like I was being funneled in a certain direction, but made me feel like I was making choices that were being rewarded.
That's actually something that this game does really well, especially through there, with like showing you places that maybe in past games would just be a static image of a location, you know, like a painted texture of a wall with a window with stuff behind it, but is now something that you can, you know, if you navigate through the ducts the correct way and, you know, find the vent that you can knock out and climb down through, like you can find your way there and get the shotgun you saw in the like in the corner, or like pick up some of those optional weapons. Well, like I've rambled enough about,
so do we want to talk about right there what was everybody's favorite weapon?
Yeah, I was going to say, I've rambled enough about the development cycle and like the 50 plus awards that it won after it launched. And, you know,
this is a seminal game. Like this is one of the games. And as someone who had never played it before, finally seeing it was like, I understand why it holds the place that it holds in, you know, current gaming's history. But to answer your question, the Tau Cannon, I think is the name. I enjoyed that one a lot.
Is that one of the energy weapons? I don't remember all the, that sounds yeah. like it.
Yeah.
It is indeed.
Okay. Yeah. It's the one before the glue gun, the glow yeah. gun or whatever.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with your trusty crowbar.
That's was going to be my choice. Your trusty crowbar.
I hate the fucking crowbar. Crowbar can suck my dick. Fuck off. I could not for the life of me figure out how to kill head crabs with them. It. I'm just fucking, you know, swiping all you over the place. You
gotta crouch when they're on the ground.
Yeah. Like I just felt like the range that I would do was always off on them. I'm just swinging wildly as they're just eating away at my HP.
I'm a big fan of the shotgun when you find it in the game, because that's the point where you found the pistol, you found the assault rifle, but they both use the same ammo. So you're still not necessarily out of the weeds yet as far as the ammo crisis that you're under. But once you find that shotgun, you've gained an additional type of ammo to work with, so that you can.
I mean, once you start fighting soldiers, you can pick up a assault rifle at any time. It took me an embarrassingly long amount of time to realize that the assault rifle has a grenade launcher on it.
Yep. It's not always there. You have to find.
You got to get shells. You know, yeah, it's always there. It's always there. Yeah. You just have to have shells for it. Yeah, I ended up probably using the assault rifle the most as like my, like once I had it as my, you know, kind of main weapon. But then like I kind of would, I have a toss up kind of, it's like a, almost like a three-way tie for most effective weapons, but it's like for kind of specific things. And it's like in the more hectic encounters at the end, you want these specific weapons because they will deal, you know, the highest DPS per shot and can let you be the most efficient with ammo. The shotgun is probably the basic tier of that.
Yes.
Then you get
the early game version of that.
And then you get the Magnum and the crossbow. Become the
crossbow,
like,
is a great weapon.
When I've gone to Alien World and when you're going through like the facilities and shit, and you're just trying not to get zapped by the zappy guys, you're just peeking from a corner, plink, with the crossbow, and it one shots pretty much any regular enemy. And then the Magnum, the revolver, was good against the flying ones that shoot fireballs at you. You just pop a couple there and they go down fast. Yeah, the energy weapons were like kind of cool, but I just felt like they burned through too fast. And
I mean, ammo in this game in general can be burned really fast if you're not paying attention.
I killed myself way too many times with the remote bombs. I killed myself way too many times with that. Grenades were more of a tool than a weapon.
Yeah.
Sentries.
Grenades are something that, like, if you don't have a lot of when you get to the tentacle, the rocket chamber.
You're
going to really hate yourself because there's like a couple that you can pick up there, but you really want to.
Yeah, absolutely. You distract them with the grenade tossing.
I always grabbing random scientists or guards, telling them to follow me, and then sending them to their death.
Just send them in front of the turrets.
Exactly. I was just
you deserve
say, in front
death.
Of the turrets. It's amazing.
Unlock this door for me, and then die. Yep.
Die. Just get peppered.
The number one most reloaded save state for me was returning to the rocket chamber after you've turned on the power. And having to get over the electrified puddle.
Oh, I remember that. I did not have trouble with that one.
I was at a point health wise where it's like, if I failed, I kept walking out with like just enough health where it was like a one hit territory for most enemies.
I think my most reloaded was when you come out on the side of the mountain. Because again, I was in a really dangerous health spot, and I had to use the scope on the crossbow in order to get the soldiers that are, you know, far off and are just fucking taking pot shots at you. But then there's one like right below you. There's to the right, both up and down.
This game is unrelenting, relatively speaking, with enemy placement and health, ammo, and energy locations.
Dude, it's a Souls game.
Yeah.
It's a Souls-like, and it has that comedic
effect. I'm curious how many of you died to the little dudes on the ceiling that grab you and pull you up.
Once, at least.
Having seen you play Black Mesa
you were aware.
Before, I knew what they are. They only did damage to me, like, once.
They only got
had really low health, and they did damage to me one time because I missed it and I like turned into one and then died.
I would just shoot them with the pistol before walking through.
I had one full death, and then a couple grabbed me, but I was quick enough to kill them and would just fall. All right, take a little bit of fall damage.
I really appreciated the alien design in this game. Properly unsettling,
And a huge variety.
Yeah, I mean, the game is at a sweet spot in terms of length, that the variety of enemies is kind of just right, and they start to introduce new ones.
The pacing of enemy introduction is good.
There's also like
the first, it's just, you know, just head crabs and, you know, head crab controlled scientists.
Then you get the Zappy boys.
Yeah.
And then you know, it's the government. You know, the government's out to kill me too. Oh no.
I think this game makes firm that the real aliens are scientists and we should not trust or respect any of them.
Yeah.
Science, I mean, is the world the is scientists flat. Are the nerds. Only dudes in the game who will jab you up and give you some healing.
You know, oh, yeah. So you'd like to use some medical attention for that wound. Anyways, they're giving me stims. I'm stimming again.
One of the like frustrations I had with the jank of this game is like, and we talked about it a little bit, it has the bones of a modern game in a lot of senses. Like, you know, the exploratory factor of finding, you know, seeing the gun in the other room, figuring out the puzzle to go get that. You know,
so many of the times the puzzle is break the window with a crowbar and jump through.
Yeah. That was always my first go to, but like
shut off the power that's making the water electric.
Yeah.
Or say, fuck it, we ball and just go.
But so like it has so many of those elements. It had like a mixture of platforming, the puzzling, the shooting, you know, but it was just a janky version of it.
Yeah, I mean, because you say like it had the bones or whatever of modern gaming. This is the bones.
This is.
That's what I'm saying.
It totally is.
But like,
it totally is.
They did it.
Yo, Bioshock just copied Half-Life.
They did so well in like introducing those fundamentals and like putting those in, you know, in a game that was good and definitely good for its time. But I'm just so used to the modern versions of it, and you know,
I wanted to make you guys play a game from history that was innovative, and yeah, I said innovative. That's the British way of saying that.
Length.
But also like wasn't super long. I originally, again, I was flip-flopping between this and Portal. Portal being, you know, more puzzly and physics based. Whereas, you know, Half-Life fits more into the platforming and shooting, and you know, there's a story to be told more in Half-Life than in Portal, even though you debatable, I guess.
There's a story.
There's supposed to be more of a story in Portal 2, right?
Yes.
Yeah, see, that's so, like, you're thinking like, oh, should I switch to Portal or whatever, kind of last minute? And I was like, but I would want to play Portal 2, so it ends up being just a bit longer than Half-Life. But yeah, I recently finished Portal, and maybe we'll do an episode on the Portal games later.
Like, just speaking to this being so foundational, like, hey, I want to say a couple things. I know everyone,
you can vent your frustrations. You told me this was a horror game for you, so like, I'm waiting to hear
this. That's the truth. It is, you know, currently playing this today, this is a horror game for me. I the controls, I just, so much frustration in just the basic things for me that it just,
hey man, be happy you're playing,
jumping over a little edge. Jumping over a little
dude,
ledge,
jumping really into the vents,
makes me insane.
Having to do the jump crouch move.
Yeah,
and getting it perfectly. The boxes, moving the boxes when I don't want to move the boxes. Yeah, yeah, the boxes moving the opposite direction of the way I want them to move when I'm trying to move them.
I got stuck on the side of the ladder.
The ladders are terrible.
The ladders are horrible. The ladders killed me quite a few times.
I still don't understand the ladders.
You know what's the one that
those are my saves?
Look which way you want to go. And you go.
I texted Matt once. I was like, I'm about to quit this game, like an hour or two in. Where it's like you're jumping into an elevator shaft and you need to jump and grab the ladder. I kept, you know, clipping and hitting my head on the the top of the ceiling, and it was I that is actually where I died probably the most. Was just constantly
those were one of my biggest saves.
I was like, if I don't get past this in the next 20 minutes, I quit.
The first thing I did to save myself was I mapped all of my face buttons to the back buttons on my Steam Deck for my rerun with the Steam Deck and the new controller layout. And that way I could have full fingers on sticks control while still having all of my face button connections.
To actually jump. You can and have both sticks. All right. That
would be an improvement. But like, here's the thing. I can critique it that way, but if we went back in time
with controller support, because the game was originally just a pure keyboard and mouse game.
Yeah. True.
I picked this game partially because it had been switched to have the 25th anniversary support.
There were some times when I was getting so frustrated with like the weird little bits of platforming. I'm like, what if I just try, because I'm playing it on PC, but with controller, I'm like, what if I try and just do the mouse and keyboard right now? Is the controller the problem? It wasn't the problem. It was not the problem.
I contemplated that, but I never tried it.
Yeah, same. I'm glad
it was not the problem. Because I'm trying to, like, you know, I'm using WASD to move, and then you got to hit, you know, space bar to jump, and like do and C to crouch, and like do that at the same time.
Oh,
and
no.
I got hand cramp.
I played the original Half-Life in college on my teammate's computer while we were on away games. But I played Black Mesa, which was the fan-made remake of Half-Life 1 using the Half-Life 2 engine, which is like Valve certified, which still doesn't have controller support, is pure mouse and keyboard.
It's got like the new kind of Steam thing that I forget what it's called now, where it's like it's not official controller support, but like it will kind of like read things for you.
Yeah.
I forget they call it something. I forget what it is, but like
you can kind of
do it, but it's not official. It's not real.
You see, part of my intrusive evil thoughts were when I was flipping and flopping between Half-Life. The other game I was flipping and flopping between is the System Shock 2, or System Shock, but System Shock 2 for the remake in particular, the Night Dive Studio.
That game just seems like
which is punishing. So much crunchier than this PC wise.
Yeah, for not making us go through that.
So, but listen, what I do want to say though, despite these critiques, if you took me and you went back in time to like 2000 and I played this game, my mind would be blown. Like there's no question about that. Like it is excellent for when it is from. But apparently, just comparatively,
this game had a PS2 copy that released in 2001. I didn't know that. I thought that the only physical release that Valve ever did was the Orange Box, but that was the only one that ever went to Xbox.
But yeah, so I do think like ultimately there's a lot to hear that I like, and just in terms of being like seeing this game in recent in new modern games, this Dead Space is Half-Life. Like, yep. In so many ways, it is playing a modern version of this game, just outside of, you know, some not that big story tweaks, realistically. Like, it is this game, and I love that game, and love what space. It took from it. Yeah, exactly. Pretty much in space. Yeah. And, like, slightly less scientific, more extractive industry type thing, but whatever.
It's
overall the same.
You could say that Callisto Protocol is the same too.
We won't, though. We won't be saying that.
That's like the horse drawing meme where it's like the back of the horse is pretty well drawn, the middle of the horse is like really well drawn, and then the front of the horse is like a like stick figure animation style. Like that's Half-Life, Dead Space, Callisto Protocol.
But Mike also said something that I wanted to say, which is this is a Souls game. Like, I also saw so much of Souls game, like what I like about Souls being taken from what this game does. And I thought that was very, very fun as well. Because that wasn't something I expected.
Clearly Souls gets its inspiration from Kingsfield, which came out in 96. So,
yeah, which came first? Did we have like, so I already mentioned like my favorite level, which is probably the office complex.
It's probably the most well-designed overall section of the game. Like the interactivity and the way it all connects together.
Yeah, there are bits later on where it just kind of gets a little too esoteric. Maze. It's either maze. It is either too much of a maze or too straightforward, too linear of a path.
That's what I think that area does so well, is it makes it is a maze, but it doesn't feel like it is a maze to be a maze. Like there is
The thing the office complex does is, because you can see so much, because there's so many windows and doors with windows and things on it.
Yeah.
You're never like fully closed off from where you're going.
Yeah.
So you can be like, oh, I dropped through this vent and look like, oh, that's where I just was. I'm over here now. So then that door takes me to that room with the electrified water.
Yeah. Makes it easier to put that, like make a blueprint in your mind.
So it's like my least favorite level. My least favorite level is the one that purely just feels like a maze to fuck with you, is the extended tram bit, where you're like trying to take the trams up these different levels and through these different tunnels. And I eventually just got off the fucking tram and walked the whole way. And got, because eventually, once you get to a certain point, there will be new trams and new doors to open. And because it's like, there's a whole bit of like, you're going on the tram and you can like shoot the directional thing to change the track.
Yeah, change which way
to go here.
Classic game design.
I just said, fuck that. I am going to walk the whole way and just make sure I don't hit the electrified rail and I'll be fine. I still hit the electrified rail a few times, but, because there's a shit ton of enemies in a bunch of those parts of the levels. There's a bunch of soldiers. Like you come across them fighting some, you know, soldiers fighting some aliens, and I'm not dealing with all of this. So I cut out one part of the equation.
Without the guide, I probably would have stopped playing there. That probably would have been the end for me. The guide got me through that for sure.
I think that's like that. It was after that section where I was like, yeah, I am going. I like managed to get through it without the guide. But after that point, I was like, nope, I'm pulling this up on my vertical monitor here. And I'm just going to be referencing that the whole time. I ain't wasting my fucking time with the rest of that nonsense. Nobody got time for that.
No, the guide's needed. The guide is, if I didn't play this with a guide, you would be hearing me go like absolutely crazy. That's for sure. I probably would have played 2 hours.
There's a certain point where a lot of games, you know, everyone has their own different point in time where they say, you know, pre whatever. For me, I'd probably say pre 2000. Anything pre 2000 playing with a guide is like perfectly acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah,
because there was a lot of game design in the 90s where they're like, yeah, it's perfectly fine just to have this random tree be interactive, but we won't tell the player, and it hides.
There's no sparkly thing to show.
Yeah.
Or it's like ADHD wasn't a thing then.
ADD wasn't a thing then. It was an invention by the pharmaceutical industry.
This is me just nitpicking, but a lot of it was also Nintendo doing shit to sell Nintendo Power subscriptions.
Mm. Yeah. We've talked about that.
You're like, oh, now you know where all the secret locations in the first Zelda are. It's like, without that, how am I supposed to know that this nondescript wall is bombable?
True. Here's a plus side of that, though. Beyond the cynical vision of, yeah, I'm selling, it's to sell the printed guides and shit, which is like where they make their money, because that shit's cheap to produce. And can be sold at a huge markup.
Exactly.
Or like it's early subscription model type shit, right? You know, like you subscribe to this magazine and get this.
And you can call the phone.
It's DLC. It's the first pay to win, dude. You're buying the better materials.
Yeah. But say on the flip side of it, you have this kind of cool community aspect to it, right?
because if your neighbor has Nintendo Power, now everyone in the neighborhood has Nintendo Power.
Or it's just like you have like the legendary older kid in the neighborhood who beat the water temple, and you know, and now you ask Senpai to come over and watch you and help you. Yeah. So
you had that kid who knew how to get to the secret level in Star Fox 64.
Or you had the kid who knew the hot coffee cheat in San Andreas.
Yeah, so it, like it has.
Or you had the kid who lied to you about Sonic being in Super Smash Brothers Melee and coming up with absurd unlock criteria, like leave yourself in game for like 72 hours consecutive or something like that. Where I left my GameCube on for 3 straight days in a fucking Melee game.
But so like there is that kind of cool aspect of it that we don't get anymore, right? You know, so there's pros and cons to all of it. But I still
feel that connection when I'm looking at old like GameFAQs guides.
Did any of you get to any, or say, did you two get to the portal puzzle level? In the laboratory.
No, that's where I stopped.
I saved Scum. That's where I absolutely saved Scum the shit out of that game. After every successful portal jump, save.
Yep.
Because the way it works though is it'll keep sending you back to the bottom. Like you will you go in one way and you can get like a bunch of ammo and health up like buffs and all this shit, and then it sends you back to the beginning. And you've got to do the whole thing over again. But so each time successfully, just, you know, nope, save. I'm not dealing with that again. Save like so much. And then you've got to do some jumping bits with it as well as you get further beyond that big tower portion of it. And
I was reading the guide and I said, that's nice. I'm not doing all that.
I ain't reading all that.
So yeah, that was my stopping point.
I think that's fair.
The jumping, the control.
Even the guide says it's bad.
I fully assigned you guys this game, not expecting you guys to beat it. It's an old game. I expected frustration to boil over at some point.
It did. A few times.
So sweaty. So sweaty.
I'm always with first-person platforming. I just wanted to give
you
guys a
full spectrum. You know, last year it was Nier. Mm-hmm. So sweaty for different reasons. You know, why are you playing your game one-handed?
That is a different challenge. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, imagine that challenge run. Imagine that person doing that challenge run.
Gotta buy a one-handed controller.
Yeah, get banned from Twitch. For all the sounds.
Have you seen people? They'll 3D print.
I've seen.
They'll 3D print Joy-Con grip that holds both of them for one hand, so that you can access all the buttons in one hand.
I've looked into buying them so I could play the Switch while I poop on the toilet, and like, you know.
I'm so confused as to how the Switch hasn't solved that problem already.
Yeah, just be a man.
I don't want my dick touching the fucking toilet in any way. Fucking hanging there, so I'm holding on.
Boy, this is the Curb Your Enthusiasm Big Johnson Club episode.
Dangling down into the water.
Or hitting the porcelain. I don't want my tip hitting the porcelain. New York City's got those small circular-ass bowls.
Oh, you got to get the extended bowl. We've completely lost the plot here. you got to get the extended bowl.
I do like that you can flush the toilets in Half-Life.
Yeah. No, dude, there's so many little things you can interact with and hit that do something.
I feel like I think there's somebody shitting in one of them and you can give them toilet paper.
Fantastic.
In like the early level before shit has really hit the fan.
Yeah, but
like,
before shit really hits
like,
the fan.
It's when you go to your locker. I think you can.
Oh yeah.
Yep. To the locker room, you can hand somebody who's taking a mean old company shit. You know, respect to that guy. Yeah.
Did you see the story about this? This is something I thought was funny that I was reading, Matt. The potential release on Apple and why that
who
didn't
that,
happen.
Who in that audience? Or do you mean the early Apple computers?
Yeah, no, this is like in 2002 or one. Did you read about this at all, Matt? It was pretty funny.
There was something about, because there was a launch on PS2. Something about Apple, Linux.
Yeah, Apple, Linux, and I think that was it. But yeah, they said that Mac players would be second class customers, and there's a rumor that essentially he was just mad at Apple for doing like Apple things already, more or less.
Hell yeah.
So yeah,
probably like charging it a big overhead fee to be on their platform.
They misrepresented. That's what it was. They misrepresented sales projections. Actually, it's supposedly the rumor is that they misrepresented the sales, and so he pulled it, which is pretty funny.
I mean, fair enough. I mean, Apple gonna be Apple. Tim Apple is always out there trying to be, always be scamming.
But I'd also want to the DLCs here. Like I feel like this is also probably pretty early game to do DLCs in a way like this did.
There was quite a bit, and there's also quite a bit that this game has been used to turn mods and.
Dude, wasn't Counter-Strike originally a Half-Life mod?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Counter-Strike was a Half-Life mod that they then hired the person who did it to make Counter-Strike. And the two DLCs, I think, were also mods that they ended up making these expansions, which are pretty cool concepts. One of them is...
I mean, they did that with... it was, I think, 2 years ago, one of the game shows we watched, where Half-Life Alyx had a fan-made...
Yes.
A fan-made mod that was getting, like, was being legitimized by Valve.
By Valve, yeah. But the expansions are pretty cool. Like the one follows essentially the game plots as if you are a security guard at Black Mesa, and the other
a 30 minute game where you show up to work, all of a sudden shit goes down and you're dead.
Yeah, that one did get criticized for being short, which I thought was pretty funny.
Just a head crab pops out of the ceiling and kills you.
And then the other one, I think you're like a scientist. No, you're part of the, sorry, no, that's wrong. The other one, you're part of the military, which is also interesting.
So it's just all about, you know, just seeing the game from the different perspectives.
Yeah. So there you go. Just another tie in. Nier took that from this. Done. Bingo. Another one checked off.
Half-Life. Gordon Freeman, X2B, when? I mean, they would do that because it's not three.
It's not three.
There's our second one. There's, you know, but we can't do a third because that be the quota.
Yeah, if you do a third for one, then you expect thirds for the others. You know, can't do that.
Yeah, all of a sudden people are gonna be like, "Where's Portal 3?" You know,
no, you can't do that.
Left 4 Dead 3, anybody?
What do you guys all think about like the kind of political thesis that this game is operating under? I'll just say for me, Valve seems like a company that likes to think of itself as being apolitical in a way. And I'm just spitballing. This is just purely like I'm going off of vibes. But like their games
by no means apolitical.
No, they have a political bent to them. They all share this theme of being, you know, anti-corporate. They criticize, you know, private interest at its height. But I think from a libertarian perspective, I think is where it comes down to.
Yeah. Yes. That's so, I mean, totally what it feels like to me.
They are Seattle based.
So they're, you know, so if they're, if, you know, if they're left leaning, they are, you know, crunchy anarchist, you know.
Yes, that's where I was going.
They're libertarian leftists, which, you know, in my opinion, misses a lot of the point. And you see that with the everything you hear about Valve's their own corporate structure, about like, and it's like how basically
anyone can work on anything.
It's literal nonsense.
They get nothing done. They get nothing fucking done because it's like it's a miracle that they made the Steam Deck, you know,
and that got out of
like, you know, just R&D, because there's like, yeah, we have like this radically horizontal structure, which sounds flat cool.
Structure.
Yeah, which sounds cool, but in ultimately ends up meaning that nothing gets fucking done ever.
Boomer takes on alert.
So when Matt said that they had left Microsoft, that's always the first thing I always think too is if they were into, or if they had more theories on like the open source, as opposed to Microsoft, hoarding everything. Yeah. And I think that, you know, them being Americans, they probably are libertarian, but with a bunch of contradictory and, you know, varying hypocritical views, whether from the left and right, that they pull, you know, to their advantage,
right.
But more right than anything, because they still are a, you know, right libertarian, because they're still, you know, capitalist free market. They, you know, are willing to buy, you know, let people mod and then buy them and things like that. I think speaks more to that, like,
that's the free market, baby. Coming from
a tradition of like conflicting with Microsoft, for, you know, the open source versus like the subscription and paywalled model.
Let's be real. They left Microsoft because it was too woke.
I just did a quick check here. I went Gabe Newell politics to Google.
Oh boy.
And do you have the first article?
I say, are there freedom of information things about his political donations? Let's hear it.
The first is his donor lookup. We'll go there first. But the second is an article, Gabe Newell's Libertarian Beliefs.
Yeah. Boom. Called it. Didn't even look that shit up and called it.
No, we knew it.
Because like this game is critical of...
Please tell me he was a Ron Paul supporter.
Had to be.
Top contributions to Ron Paul.
This game is critical of the corporate stuff, but it is also critical of the government. Equally critical of them.
Absolutely. It's like that
it's self-serving.
Yeah, it's that that Black Mesa is at its front facing a private institution, but that is ultimately and you see that at the beginning as you're going through the tram and there's a fucking ICBM in a hangar, that, you know, like that this is all military funding, and you know that this is a military project that is now gotten out of control. The eggheads have lost control, so they send in the jarheads to fucking kill everybody and wipe them out. And so yeah, it's critical of the government, not necessarily of, you know, like the police and military like industrial complex, you know. Yeah. Like the militarization of our culture, that it's not really what it's critiquing. It's critiquing control of power, and so where it's like power in a centralized body is bad, no matter who it's coming from. And so hit me with the donor list. Hit me with it. What does he got?
I mean, it's just a cavalcade of Gary Johnson. It's just a cavalcade of parentheses D.
So Democrats
down the donor list.
So again, to Mike's point, correct again. He's a fucking libertarian who has no coherent, you know, belief system. Because again, libertarianism is the self-defeating philosophy.
Yeah. No, for sure. And like, you know, I was just searching him in open source, and
lots Google for wasn't Maria giving... Cantwell.
Is that probably some like Seattle?
Joe Biden in 2019.
Geo Vibin.
Yeah, Chris Dodd. I was
Chris Dodd. What a pull. What a pull for all of us. Love it. We love it.
I Googled his name in open source. The Google has only given me like the past 10 years as like top hits. But in 2013, he was saying how like Linux and open source is going to be the future of gaming.
I mean, Steam OS is Linux.
Yeah, exactly. So he definitely left Microsoft for some sort of, you know, disagreement.
He left Microsoft in a pretty upset state because he's always been pushing gaming towards a Linux-based future more than Windows.
Yeah, and so,
you know, Microsoft's like, we can't monetize that, so how about you shut the fuck up?
Microsoft is like, huh? We can't hear you over being the number one used OS in industry.
That's funny. Of course, he's a little bit
nailed it. We nailed it.
Yeah,
you know, he's largely contributing to. Yeah, Maria Cantwell is the senator. Is the senator from Washington State? And then I do see Chris Dodd at the bottom.
Yep.
Absolutely incredible.
Get him to shut up about video games.
So good. Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. He's for charter schools.
Yeah, this one here.
Yes, on Washington 1240 Coalition for Public Charter Schools. Fucking again, yeah, completely incoherent.
Yeah, of course. He's an American.
I mean, yeah, bingo, average American, yeah. Incoherent. Doesn't make sense. Yeah. Brain's broken, too much burger, game over.
Too much burger, microplastics.
You got that sick combination, it's far more likely that it's soy based.
You got that sick combination of all those things. You got grass fed beef, soy, and microplastics all jumbled together into a nice little slurry.
And old enough to have some lead, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. I love the conspiracy theories that Joe Biden doesn't have dementia. It's just lead brain. It's just the ramifications from lead poisoning. Love it.
When we had real gasoline in this country.
All right, we're
Dad sure could drive a car.
We're slowly falling off the rails here, but I think we've pretty much covered all the topics. I mean, Ben finished it and got to fight the giant baby,
space baby.
I looked up the fight because I did want to see the conclusion, and
it's stupid. It's stupid. Kind
of, yeah. I much prefer the big head crab fight beforehand.
Yes, the mother of the head crabs. Yeah,
Gone Ranch.
You take the fucking the RPG thing. Basically, you turn off the red sight. You hide behind one of the pillars. You shoot the three orange crystals, and then you just unload your best weapons into giant baby after that until it's Jover.
Occasionally get zorped elsewhere, come back.
I never got zorped because you just hide behind the pillar, and again, you can also save scum that entire fight as well.
Yep.
Here's another inconsistency, and you know, supports Gabe voting Democrat, killing babies. He wants everyone out there killing babies.
I mean, this baby deserved to die, and that can get clipped.
Yeah, I do know that there are claims that last third-ish, essentially everything on the alien planet is significantly less good than everything before then.
Black Mesa is supposed to... it's supposed to be a really faithful remake up until there, and then they're supposed to have fleshed out and expanded the alien world and whatnot more.
Interesting. Did you feel that way playing it though too?
I mean, I never finished Black Mesa.
No, the original.
I mean, yeah, you can tell there's definite crunch on a certain portion of the game, and I mean, they released it in 2 years, originally one.
To me, at that point, I was like, "Yeah, good. I'm ready to get done." Yeah. You know, so I was. You had a few more frustrations with platforming, like when you have like the super jump pack thing, and you've got to jump down these spiraling kind of moving platforms, slash little big or not little big stingray fucking alien transport things. and taking a lot of fall damage from those, and that was a bit frustrating. And but then, you know, there's parts of that that are super difficult, but then they give you free access to these healing pools. You just go and you just chill in the healing pool, and you just regain you regain all your health. So, you know, a little bit of a weird balance there.
And I mean, we love a game that ends on a "we're gonna make a sequel" cliffhanger.
Did you go through the door? That should be the final question. Did you go through the door?
I mean, of course.
I did not, and the fucker killed me.
He killed the shit out of you.
He teleported me into a group of like the big brutes, and they just fucking gang raped me.
Yep.
I would have gone through the door if I had.
Yeah.
I want to see what secrets this G-man has for me. Maybe he can finally show me the G-spot.
Dude, the bit with the G-man where you're in the office complex and you're like going through a door, you're trying to open a door, and he just comes up and just in the reflection does his tie. I was like, who is this dapper motherfucker? that one was a bit of a whoop jump scare type moment when he first just popped up.
There's some good intrigue there. Like, I did end up going down some deep lore Reddit posts around what the G-man is.
Rabbit holes into what he is. Is he part of that alien race? Is he part of another alien race? Is he human?
Is he related to other control?
Yeah. is this part of the Alan Wake verse? Maybe this maybe this gets me to play almost said Alan Wake 2.
Half-Life 2.
Half-Life 2. Maybe.
I mean, Half-Life 2 is leaps and bounds more modernized.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just in general not a big shooter fan. You know, it's like there's some of it I enjoy, some is fine. It's just like
a Helldivers fan.
Absolutely. A shooter has to do a whole lot to get me invested and on board for a while. This maybe has just enough intrigue as well as some, you know, interesting level design and whatnot to appreciate it for things outside of the shooting.
You see, next year's game choice will just be Half-Life Alyx, and I'll make you all buy VR headsets.
Not okay. As much as I would be interested to do that, like, yeah, maybe if Alyx on like the Meta Quest now?
I believe so.
You're gonna get the Meta Quest.
Damn it! Another fucking recall. God damn it! It's a Sunday. Leave me alone.
The Lord's Day.
It is an important thing he's calling me about, though. So Lord, I will have to log off shortly and take care of that. Well, Matt, thank you for leading us through this. And for forcing us to play a game that none of us would probably ever choose.
Yep, that was the point and the goal.
I
was toying around with it, and I was like, maybe I make them play like Dragon Quest, and I was like, Dragon Quest right after Final Fantasy is a little bit much.
I do want to play Dragon Quest 11. It's charisma, and it looks just so absolutely gay in the best way. Whereas, like, make me think of again. I texted you guys this earlier. You know, obviously, Matt and I are currently playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I texted this in the chat because Andrew sent like a tweet that was basically saying the same thing. But it's like, honestly, this is the most girly pop game I have played in a long time, and it's so good. Whereas Half-Life is just pure masculinity, the masculine urge to do science, make a portal, rip a portal,
with a crowbar
through another dimension. Beats other sentient alien life to death with a fucking crowbar.
Hit every vent with a crowbar, even though only some of them are destructible.
I can't tell you how many times I'm just bing 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 bing. Yeah, you gotta destroy every single wooden crate because there's stuff in
there. It's like the area where the tentacles are in the rocket test area, where I think it's the second level where you have to go down the ladder there and destroy the cover to that. Like the amount of times I ran around, I was like, where am I supposed to go? This is just an empty room with nothing in it and a locked door.
Yep. Did that a couple times.
All right. Well, again, Matt, thank you for leading us through this. Let's see. We were, before we started recording, we were doing some schedule shakeup stuff, but I believe next episode, well, not next week, it'll be a,
well, next week might be a D&D episode because I'll have time to finish editing.
Okay. Well, yeah, before we put that out though, we'll talk behind the scenes. We'll want to make sure that we've scheduled the next time to finish the D&D thing to make sure that we're
just do it in the hotel while we're in Boston. Yeah. Five head.
And that, yeah, so be on the lookout for something potentially dropping this next week. And then after that, we're going to do an adaptation episode. And we were just kind of throwing shit around again before the podcast. We might do the Hitman movie. Feeling like a little trip down. Yeah, it's a perfect FX movie, which as we have shown, we love those type of movies. They're our favorite kind of movies.
FX has the movies, they say.
They do. I have heard similar. But yeah, we will see you next time. We'll see you when we see you. Thank you again. We will be sure to bring you something fun and exciting next time. Until then.